Welcome to Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Mardell. And it's time for another exciting chapter in Black Bartlemy's Treasure by Jeffrey Farnall. Tells how I stole my breakfast. The mist lay very thick all about me, but when I had climbed a higher ground, it thinned away somewhat, so that as the pallid light grew, I began to see something of the havoc wrought by the storm. Here and there lay trees uprooted, while everywhere was a tangle of broken boughs and trailing branches, insomuch that I found my going no small labor. But presently, as I forced a way through these leafy tangles, the birds awakening began to fill the dim world with blithe chirpings that grew and grew to a sweet clamor, ever swelling until the dark woods thrilled with gladsome music, and I, beholding the first beam of sun, felt heartened thereby spite my lack of sleep and the gnawing of hunger's sharp fangs, and hastened with blither steps. Thus, in a while, I break forth of the desolate trees, and came out upon a fair rolling meadow, with blooming hedgerows before me, and beyond the high road. And now, as I stayed to get my bearings, uprose the sun in majesty, all glorious in purple and pink and gold, whose level beams turned the world around me into a fair garden, all sweet and fresh and green, while in the scowling woods behind, the sullen mists crept furtive away, till they were vanquished quite, and those leafy solitudes became a very glory. But my hunger was very sore, a need I proposed to satisfy soon, and at all hazards. Therefore, having marked my direction, I went at speed, and crossing the meadow, came into the highway and struck south. On my going through the woods, I had chosen me a cudgel in place of the one lost, shortish and knotted and very apt for quick wrist play. And I plucked forth my sailor's knife, meaning to trim my staff therewith. But with it poised in my hand, I stopped all at once, for I saw that the point of the stout blade, the which I had sharpened and whetted to an extreme keenness, I perceived, I say, that the blade was bent somewhat and the point turned hook-like. Now, as I strode on again, the early sun flashing back from the steel, I fell to wondering how this had chanced, and bethinking me of those two deadly blows I had struck in the dark, I scrutinized my knife, blade and haft, yet found nowhere on it any trace of blood, so that 'twas manifest the fellow had worn some protection. Chain shirts were common enough, and many a rogue went with a steel skull to line his hat. So, it seemed the fellow lived yet, and black rogue though he was, I was vaguely glad 'twas not my hand had sent him to his account. I was yet revolving the matter in my mind when I heard a loud and merry whistling, and glancing up beheld a country fellow approaching down a side lane. He wore a wide-eaved hat, and his smock was new-washed and speckless, but that which drew and held my eyes, that which brought me to a sudden stand, was the bundle he bore wrapped in a fair white clout. So with my gaze on this, I stood leaning on my knotted, untrimmed staff, waiting him. Suddenly chancing to turn his head, he espied me, halted in his stride, then eyeing me askance, advanced again. A small man he was, with rosy face, little merry eyes, and a wide upcurving mouth. "Good morning, Tui. It do have been a terrible bad storm last night, master." "Aye," says I, and my heart warmed to him by reason of his good Kentish tone, the like of which I had not heard these many weary years. But at sight of that white clouded bundle, my mouth watered and the hunger gnawed with sharper tooth. "What have you here?" I questioned, touching this with my staff. "Nowt but my dinner, master, as ever was." "Nay," says I, scowling, "I think not." "Ay, but it be, master," he nodded, "bread and beef, well, mossel of cheese as ever was. Bread, says I. Beef, cheese, liar. Here is no dinner of yours. Aye, master, but it do be so sure, quoth he, staring. My very own dinner, cut by my very own daughter. Beef and bread and a morsel of cheese. I take my Bible oath on it, I do. Beef and bread and a morsel. Show me. With notable haste, he undid the wrapping, discovering a good half loaf, a thick slice of roast beef, and a slab of yellow cheese. Ha, man, quoth I, twixt shut teeth, so you lied to me then.
Lied to ye, master? Says he faintly.
You told me 'twas your dinner.
Oy, and so it be, so it be. I lay my oath. Beef, did you see, and a morsel.
Nay, says I, gathering up the viands, here's my breakfast.
Is it? Says he, gaping.
It is, would you deny it?
Not for a moment, says he, eyeing my staff and the gleaming knife in my belt.
Lordy, no! Only how was I to know 'twere yourn, master, when my daughter cut it for her very own feyther?
We live and we learn, says I, turning away. What might your name be?
Full of joy, Tucker, master.
Why then, full of joy, though my gain be your loss, take comfort in that 'tis more blessed to give than receive. Moreover, though you lack a dinner, you have a daughter and a roof to shelter you. And I, neither one nor other, a poor, hungry rogue. Methinks, of the two of us, you have the better of life.
Why, looky now, master, says he, scratching his shaven chin. Since you got your breakfast, surely, if you're minded to step along to my cottage down the lane, I can give ye a jug of good ale to wash it down.
Now, as he spoke thus, seeing the sturdy manliness of him, I dropped my staff and reached out my hand. Full of joy, says I, a starving man must eat by hook or crook. But if you'll give your honest hand to a thief, there's mine. The man stared from my hand to my face, his wide mouth curved, then rubbing hand on snowy smock, he grasped my fingers and wrung them heartily. A clean and honest grip, such as I had not known for many a long day.
Will he come, master? He questioned. I shook my head. Quoth I,
you have a daughter, and I'm no fit company for a good sweet maid.
Nor ever shall be, for that matter.
So saying, I dropped his hand, and turning, strode away down the road, his dinner beneath my arm, and when at last I glanced back, I saw him standing where I had left him, staring after me chin in hand. Presently, turning in at a gate along the way, I sat down beneath a hedge in the warm, level beams of the sun, and fell to eating with huge appetite, and stolen though it was, never tasted food more sweet. I was thus rapturously employed, when I heard a dolorous whine, and starting about beheld a ragged creature on the opposite side of the hedge, who glared at the food with haggard eyes, and reached out claw-like hands in supplication.
"Oh, for the love of Christ, spare a crust!" she wailed. "Spare a bite to a grandam as dieth a hunger. Oh, sweet Jesu! A mouthful to a poor soul is to be pined for lack of food!"
"Off!" cries I fiercely. "What know you of hunger? Away, hag!" And I reached for my staff, whereupon she wailed and wept, and clawing her dismal rags about her, crept away moaning. But now, while my jaws champed ravenously, the food had lost its savor. Wherefore I cursed and choked, and springing to my feet made after her. But seeing me follow at speed, she cried out in fear, and striving to flee from me, sank on feeble knees.
"Old hag," quoth I, "be damned for spoiling a hungry man's appetite, and robbing him of what he was at pains to rob for himself."
Then I thrust the well-filled napkin into her clutching fingers and hastened away, but her raptured cry followed me as I went. I trudged on slow and heavy through the mud, being very weary for lack of sleep, and mightily downcast, heedless of gladsome morn and the fair fresh world about me, conscious but of my own most miserable estate, insomuch that I presently sank down on the grass by the road, and with heavy head bowed between my hands, gave myself up to black despond. But now, as I sat thus very sick and sorrowful, I heard a sound of wheels and plodding hoofs drawing slowly near, and lifting my head at last, espied a great wain piled high with fragrant hay, whereon the driver sprawled asleep. A great fat fellow whose snores rose above the jingle of harness and creak of wheels. Now, hearkening to his snoring, beholding him so gross and full-fed, and I starving, my sadness gave place to sudden hot anger, and as the wagon lumbered by, I swung myself up behind, and clambered over the hay, raised my staff, minded to drub the fellow into wakefulness. But even then I stayed the blow, for I spied a wallet that hung to the driving seat, a large wallet of plump and inviting aspect. Reaching it down, I opened it forthwith, and found therein a new-baked loaf, a roast capon delicately browned, and a jar of small beer. And now, couched luxuriously among the hay, I fell to work tooth and nail, and though I ate in voracious haste, never before or since have I tasted aught so delicate and savory as that stolen fowl. I was yet busied with what remained of the carcass, when the fat fellow choked in his snoring, sighed, grunted, propped himself on lazy elbow, and catching sight of me, fell a-gaping. So, whiles he watched open mouth, I finished what remained of the capon, and tossed the bones over the hedge. "Ecod," quoth he faintly, "oh, ecod, my dinner! As for me having my mouth full, I spake not. "Oz Bob," says he, "a rascally robbing thief of the roads!" "Even so," I nodded, and took a long draught of his beer. "A-eatin' and a-drinkin' of an honest man's dinner, by the Lord," says he, clenching his fat fist. "Oh, ecod, a hellfire rogue, a very lousy, scurvy dog, as shall be carted and whipped and set in Sir Richard's new pillory." At this, being engaged with the bread, I reached out my foot and kicked him very featly in the belly, whereat he gaped, and growing thoughtful, dolefully watched me make an end. "If there is aught left to eat," says I, "show it me. As fine a capon as ever was plucked, by the Lord," he groaned. "Most true," says I, stretching myself in the hay. "Ah," quoth he to himself, "ah, the pity on't. So foul an end to so fair a bird." "Never wine," says I, "but tell me how far hence lieth Lamberhurst." "Better nor 6 mile," he sighed, heaving himself into the driving seat. "Why then do you carry me thither?" "Ah's love," he mourned, "'tis manifest shame a rogue should thieve the food of an honest man. A man like I be, as do slave morn and noon, and—" "Slave?" says I, frowning. "What know you of slavery? Be cursed for a great fat fool that speaketh lies." Now, watching him as I lay, I saw his hand close stealthily on his heavy whip. But or ever he could turn to strike, I rose and fetched him a buffet neath the ear that pitched him sprawling upon the broad backs of his horses, whence with much groaning and puffing he presently got him to safety into the road. Seeing the which, I took the reins, whipping the team to faster gait, so that to keep faced he must needs trot it in the mud. "Hold," cries he, "what would ye do with my wagon?" "Ride in it." "Hold, there's enough for me to ride likewise. I'm scant of breath." "Good, I've been scant of breath ere now." "Show a little pity, master," he groaned. "None ever showed pity on me." "Nay, but what harm have I ever done thee? Begrudged food to a starving wretch. 'Twas my dinner, and I do need a deal of feeding. Lord, how I sweat. Prithee, master, let me up. How have I deserved this?" "Called me rogue and thief." "Ay, that I did to my woe. Ay, rogue I name thee, and likewise lousy knave, and grieve for it now I do." "And so needs must you sweat a while," says I. And thus, I aloft and at mine ease, and the fat fellow trotting breathless at the wheel, we went a while, and never another word, until what with fear of losing his goods, what with the mud and heat and sweat, the poor gross fool looked well nigh spent, and all foredone, as I had seen many a better man than he. Whereupon I brought the wagon to a stand, and reached down to stir him where he leant, half swooning across the wheel. "Harkee, fool, dost know of one called Brandon of Sheen hereabouts?"
"Aye, truly, truly," he gasped. I do know Sir Richard passing well. Sbobs, my innards to be all shook to pieces, and I do be parched with thirst."
"Why, then up with you," says I, and giving him my hand, aided him back to the driving seat. Being there, he sighed, groaned, and cast a yearning eye towards his wallet.
"Parched with thirst I be," he groaned.
"I've been the like ere now," says I, and having gulped down what remained of the fellow's beer, I tossed the jar into the road, whereat he beat his breast.
"My beer," he wailed, "and I a famishing with thirst. Oh, my beer!"
"There's sweet water out of the brook yonder," says I.
"You be a chap with no bowels, for sure," he cried.
"Aye, a hard man you be."
"'Tis a hard world," says I, "but 'tis no matter for that. Tell me of Sir Richard Brandon."
"Why, then, you must know I am Miles Truman."
"And truly, man, there be miles of you, but 'tis no matter for that either. What of Sir Richard?"
"I do be coming to he," says Truman in surly tone. "I do farm Sir Richard's land.
A hard man, see you, though just."
"So, here's another hard man.
Though a just, I and a godly.
He hath restored our church weathercock, and all set up a fine, large, and fair pillory on the green.
London couldn't show a finer, with stocks and a cuckolding stool, complete and rare to fancy.
And findeth he the wherewithal to fill them?"
"Ha, that doth he. Ah, there never be a vagrant gypsy nor beggar dare come anigh in Sir Richard's time. And witches be few hereabouts since old Mother Mottridge was ducked. And scolds and shrews be fewer by reason of the brank, do you see?"
Says I, "a right proper gentleman this."
"Aye," quoth Truman, nodding until his fat cheeks quivered, "and one that doth abhor vagrants and such like vermin."
"As myself," says I. To this Truman answered nothing, but fell a-fanning himself with his hat again, eyeing me warily the while.
"Art strange in these parts?" he questioned.
"Aye and no."
"Hast met Sir Richard?"
"I have."
"Aha," quoth the fellow, nodding, "he had ye whipped, belike."
"He did so."
"For stealing of a fine fat capon, belike."
"Nay, 'twas for another matter. But what of him? Is he hale a body? Rich and well esteemed, is he strong in friends, and a power at court yet?"
"No," says Truman, flicking his plodding horses, "neither one nor t'other."
"How not?" quoth I. "And wherefore?"
"Because he's dead."
"Dead?" says I, starting up.
"Dead? Why, looky if he ain't dead, leastways."
But here I seized him by the throat, and twisting him round, shook him to and fro till he choked.
"Rogue! Damned rogue!"
I cried twixt gnashing teeth. "Will you muck me, then?"
"No, no," he gasped. "Then tell me ye lied. Confess."
I'll confess anything you will, master."
"Then Sir Richard lieth snug in his manor of Sheen, doth he not, aye or no?"
Aye, it's Sheen, it's Sheen." Hereupon I loosed him, and falling back on the hay, found myself all breathless and shaking as with an ague fit. And these tremors were within me as without, since by reason of this fellow's lying words I had for one black moment, doubting God's justice, seen as it were, my countless anguish supplications for vengeance on mine enemy, so much vain breath. And this my toilsome journey, a labor to no purpose. But now, bowing my head, I, who knew no forgiveness, humbly prayed forgiveness of God for my doubting of God, and passionately besought him that he would cherish mine enemy and save him in health, and this to no other end but that I myself might destroy him. His life, O God, give this man's life into mine hand. So prayed I, in my vain pride and selfish blindness, as I jogged along that sunny midsummer morn. And thereafter, my trembling having passed from me, I stretched myself out amid the hay and fell to blissful slumber. Now to all such, as reading this my narrative, shall contemn and abhor me, for the poor blind fool and poor desperate wretch I was, and who, living but for murder, could cry thus on God for the blood of his fellow man, to all such I would say that none can despise me more utterly than I who write these words. For life since then hath learned me many truths, and in some few things I am, mayhap, a little wiser. But because I was proud and stubborn beyond belief, because hate begetteth hate, and evil, evil, so came I to consort and make fellowship with pirates and the like rogues, and to endure much of harms and dangers, as battle, shipwreck, prison, and solitude, until God of his infinite mercy brought me forth a better man, therefore, and in some sense a more worthy, all of the which I have fully and faithfully recorded, for such as shall trouble to read this narrative to the end. And so I will again to my story.
Join me here next week for the next chapter of Black Bartlemy's Treasure on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.